There we go. Hi, everybody. And you know what, Don? Maybe one thing you should add to that announcement about the special member meeting, because last night I told everyone that the forum wasn't going to work, and it wasn't last night. So maybe you should add something about we found a fix for the forum. The forum is back on, so we're still having a special member meeting, because otherwise people may be confused, right? Because a lot of people heard me say last night that it's not going to work. But the good news is, for everyone who's listening now, Jay somehow ran across an easy fix, or somebody ran across an easy fix, and the forum is back on. So we went from thinking we were going to have to scrap it to being back. So that's good. What I'm going to do now is get us started with a song. The song is about the sun. But what the sun represents for me is the inner light. So as you listen to the song about following the sun, realize that for me, this is a song about following the inner light. It's a great song too. I think you'll just enjoy it. Thank you.
follow the sun, and which way the wind blows when this day is done.
Cute watching those kids learn that native dance, isn't it? If you were watching the video. So we're here now for Enlightened Leadership, the Tao Te Ching. And tonight, or today, it's not tonight, today, I am starting chapter 8. And I will read first from the Derek Lynn version. The highest goodness resembles water. Water greatly benefits myriad things without contention. It stays in places that people dislike. Therefore, it is similar to the Tao. Dwelling at the right place, heart with great depth. Giving with great kindness, words with great integrity, governing with great administration, handling with great capability, moving with great timing. Because it does not contend, it is therefore beyond reproach. And I'm going to look up the word contend. Engage in a competition. Yeah, engage in a competition. So it's not competing with anything. I'm going to go ahead and read the Stephen Mitchell version of the same one. The supreme good is like water, which nourishes all things without trying to. It is content with the low places that people disdain. Thus it is like the Tao. In dwelling, live close to the ground. In thinking, keep to the simple. In conflict, be fair and generous. In governing, don't try to control. In work, do what you enjoy. In family life, be completely present. When you are content to be simply yourself and don't compare or compete, everybody will respect you. All right, let's see what Wayne Dyer has to say. The supreme good is like water, which nourishes all things without trying to. It flows to low places loathed by all men. Therefore, it is like the Tao. Live in accordance with the nature of things. In dwelling, be close to the land. In meditation, go deep in the heart. In dwelling with others, be gentle and kind. Stand by your word. Govern with equity. Equity. My mind saw integrity, but it's not there. It says, govern with equity. Be timely in choosing the right moment. One who lives in accordance with nature does not go against the way of things. He moves in harmony with the present moment, always knowing the truth of just what to do. So as is typically true whenever you look at the Tao, each translation is a little different, and yet, you know, they're all very aligned here. We don't have something that's like, wow, where did that come from? So I'm going to go back to Derek Lynn. And I'm going to look at him first, and then I may occasionally pick up Stephen Mitchell or Wayne Dyer to add to it. So the first line says, the highest goodness resembles water. Well, what I hear when I read that lesson, I mean, I read that line, is that I want to be nothing but the highest goodness. And another way to say that is I want to be nothing because the highest goodness comes through emptiness. But one of the things that we need to be careful about is that we are being the nothing through which the highest goodness can come. And in fact, it says the highest goodness resembles water. Water greatly benefits myriad things without contention. I'll come back to that. But then it says it stays in places that people disdain. Water stays in places that people disdain. And both Stephen Mitchell and Wayne Dyer interpreted that line similarly. So I'll just read what Stephen Mitchell wrote. It says, it is content with the low places that people disdain. It is content with the low places that people disdain. So what that says to me is that, most people like to have their ego boosted. And so unless they happen to genuinely be the low man on the totem pole in an organization, for example, we all began at the bottom at some point, and we knew that our job was to do the low man stuff, but it was only to start climbing, right? most people do not choose the lowly jobs, right? If they have to do them to get started, they will, but most people choose something that can give them some kind of an ego boost. I remember watching the movie about Gandhi. When Gandhi really first started as a spiritual leader, at least the way I remember the movie, he was actually in Africa at the time, in a village of Indians, I think, but in Africa. And they had different things they had to do to maintain the village, one of which was cleaning the toilets. And both Gandhi and his wife are of the highest caste. And the job of cleaning the toilets belongs to the lowest class, the untouchables. But what Gandhi did was he made sure everyone rotated in all of the jobs, including himself. So he also cleaned the toilets when it was his turn. And in fact, his wife at one point, also being of the highest caste, just refused because that's an untouchable's job. And I don't remember exactly what he said to her. I'd have to watch the movie again. It's been many, many years. But the gist of it was, you either do this or you leave. you're either a part of this or you're not a part of this. And so she also had to clean the toilets. So what I hear in this is whatever work needs to be done. And whoever's around to do it rolls up their sleeves and does it. It's not a matter of, I'm too good to do that. Right? It's the humility to do those tasks, assuming they need to be done, to do those tasks that really everyone else considers low, like, cleaning the toilet, for example. So, the highest goodness resembles water. Water greatly benefits myriad things without contention. It stays in places that people dislike. Therefore, it is similar to the Tao. And really what we looked at there was the first and the third sentence, which really both focus on what I would call humility. The first sentence calls it the highest goodness, but that highest goodness comes through emptiness or nothingness, right? And then it stays in places that people disdain. As we saw, again, Stephen Mitchell and Wayne Dyer said, it is content with the low places that people disdain. Which means, we're willing to go and do whatever needs to be done. In fact, I remember when I used to teach surrender a lot, I used to tell people, you're surrendered. If called to, if you are willing to go and speak to an entire stadium of thousands of people, even on television, so thousands to millions of people, you're absolutely willing to do that. but you're also willing to go to the worst neighborhood in New York City and pick up cigarette butts. And there's no difference between them. You'll just do whatever you're called to do. You see, there are some people who very much would be willing to speak to thousands or millions of people because that boosts their ego. Other people wouldn't do that because they're too terrified. But the people who typically would go and speak to thousands and millions of people would not go into the worst neighborhood in New York City and pick up cigarette butts. That would be below them. In fact, it's kind of funny. The people who are afraid to speak in front of millions of people would be more likely to volunteer for the cigarette butt job given a choice. But surrender doesn't have those preferences in it. You know, surrender just does whatever it's asked to do. And that's what I think is being discussed here. Just whatever it is that needs to be done, that's what it does. So you know you're fully surrendered when you would be willing to do either end of that spectrum. Pick up the cigarette butts in the worst neighborhood in New York City or speak in front of millions of people. And you do it with the same humility, the same emptiness, the same willingness. So one thing we have to watch as leaders is making sure we don't get this attitude of that job is beneath me. I don't do that. You know, I don't do that. Especially if I'm the one that's available right now and it needs to be done right now. Right? I'm going to read from Stephen Mitchell for a second. He says, "The supreme good is like water, which nourishes all things without trying to. It is content with the low places that people disdain. Thus, it is like the Tao." And again, Derek says, "The highest goodness resembles water. Water greatly benefits myriad things without contention. It stays in places that people dislike. Therefore, it is similar to the Tao." So what I haven't spoken about that's in this first verse of chapter 8 is the benefiting myriad of things. Again, without any contention, right? I looked up contend, and I'm sure they probably mean the same thing, but I'm going to look up contention too. Oh, no, they don't. Heated disagreement. Contention is heated disagreement. I'm not going to go that far. I'm going to say without any grievance at all, not even a mild one. So basically, I think what's most important about this first verse is to remember we're talking about emptiness. Emptiness benefits myriad persons, myriad things. You know, it reminds me of Ramana Maharshi saying that the greatest service you can render the world is your own self-realization. Because if you genuinely realize the self, you're empty. That's what you are. And that emptiness benefits everything. It's kind of the opposite of the teaching that the ego is the cause of all suffering. You see, the ego is not emptiness. The ego is ideas. Ideas, opinions, preferences, judgments, right? Ideas, think about this, are the cause of all suffering. Everywhere in the world of every kind. We even saw this in Revolver the other day. Abby was teaching this to Jake Green while Sorter was trying to shoot the Chinese Lord John, you know, Lord John. And Abby was talking about how the ego is the cause of every crime, of every suffering, of every kind, right? And that's ideas, thinking. So emptiness is the opposite of that. And emptiness, just like the ego causes all the suffering, the emptiness is the cause of all good. All genuine goodness comes from emptiness. And what's really funny about that is in that you can't have an idea about what good is. Because if you have an idea about what good is or what should be done, you're not empty. So you can't even define goodness. You know, for example, many people would say that cancer is bad, especially cancer in a child, very, very, very bad. And what some spiritual people might seek to do, as well as medical professionals and parents, is heal that cancer. You know, spiritual people might want to try and do a miraculous healing. But then you have ideas, you're not empty. I'm not saying that miraculous healings don't occur, they do. But the miraculous healings come from the emptiness, which would never judge the cancer as bad. You see? This is why in A Course in Miracles, Jesus talks about how all miracles need to be under Christ's control. By Christ's control, he means you're not deciding where there needs to be a miracle. In fact, he says basically that if you are deciding where there needs to be a miracle, he says that could be, what is the word that he uses? It's been a long time since I've read that. It's similar to, severely misguided. I don't know if it's severely, but it has the word misguided in it. It could be severely misguided, he says. If you are trying to choose the miracles, if you are trying to decide where supreme goodness should hit next, that's because that's the thinking, that's the ideas, that's the judgment, that's the opinions. That's the same thing that causes all suffering. How can supreme goodness come from that which causes all suffering? Supreme goodness comes from the opposite of that which causes all suffering, which is emptiness. Even empty of ideas about what needs to be healed or what needs to be corrected or what needs to be changed. It's just being surrendered and in the flow. So again, we'll read from Wayne Dyer this time. The supreme good is like water, which nourishes all things, listen to these three words, which nourishes all things without trying to. Do you hear that? So it's not like trying to heal the child of cancer. That has an intention in it. The supreme good is like water, which nourishes all things without trying to. It flows to low places, loathed by all men. Therefore, it is like the Tao. So that's the first verse. So let's go ahead and look at the next verse in this chapter. I'll start with Derek Lynn. Actually, I almost need to do this line by line because each of these lines have meaning. So I think if I can get my books to stay open. There we go. I think this will work. I'll just look at one line at a time in each of the three books. So the first line is dwelling at the right place. In dwelling, live close to the ground. Live in accordance with the nature of things. In dwelling, be close to the land. So, of course, this was written a very, very long time ago. And today, very few people live, quote, close to the land. But what I think this really means for us is to live within the natural order of things instead of some contrived order. A simplistic and natural life. And it's kind of funny because some people might think live close to the land. And in fact, you'll find doctors, you know, and nutritionists that will say this now, that really you should eat organic fruits and vegetables and avoid processed foods. That may not be true. Because that may not be what's natural for you. You may have to go to more effort, drive further, spend more money, cook longer, when you are actually in a very busy life and you don't have the time to do that. I think what's important is to keep the idea simplistic in mind and natural in mind, but let intuition instruct you what is simplistic and natural for you. If I was to attempt to eat organic foods, neither of the places that I live is near an organic store. I would have to drive further. I would also have to chop and cook. It would take longer for me to prepare all of my meals. And to be honest, that doesn't work in this life that the universe has given me. I have a very busy life. Let me show you what today's lunch is, because I can eat this lunch in like 10 minutes and get on to the next thing. I have an orange that I got at Walmart, because Walmart is the store closest to my house. And I have soup that somebody else prepared for me. It's a cool flavor, butternut squash and sweet potato. But somebody else prepared the soup for me, right? That's what works well with this particular life. I also eat a lot of frozen meals. I think I'm naturally attracted, hear the word natural, I'm naturally attracted to things that are healthy. Again, if we look at my soup, with the soup I was attracted to, the first ingredient is sweet potato juice from concentrate. The second ingredient is sweet potato. The third ingredient is butternut squash, then water, then cream, then cornstarch, salt, milk, protein concentrate, carrots, cabbage, celery, onion, cinnamon, ginger, black pepper, and parsley. That's the entire list. You didn't hear anything artificial in that. Truth is, I'd never read that list before. Because like I said, I was naturally attracted to it. But it fits my lifestyle. It's easy. It came through emptiness, right? I was naturally attracted to this. So that's really what we want to pay attention to. We don't want our lives to be contrived. We don't want to make up rules. Listen to that. Make up rules about what is healthy, what is not healthy, what is good, what is not good. The truth is, those rules change every 5 to 10 years anyway. We want to allow ourselves to be naturally attracted, naturally guided, and live a simplistic life, whatever simplistic is for us. So indwelling, live close to the ground. Natural and simplistic is what I hear in that. But again, it comes from the emptiness, not from my ideas of what the heck that means. The next line. Heart with great depth. In thinking, keep to the simple. In meditation, go deep in the heart. So it looks like Stephen Mitchell is a little different here. The other two are really referring more to meditation, and Stephen put something different in. So let's just look at Derek and Wayne. Derek says, heart with great depth. And Wayne says, in meditation, go deep in the heart. Now, this is in the exact same verse as being natural and simplistic. Now, the natural and simplistic to me was about the clothes I wear, you know, the way that I take care of my body, the food I eat, how I maintain my house. We'll call it the practicals, right? I want to be simplistic and natural in the practical aspects of my life. The next line, to me, tells why. So I have time to go deeply into meditation. That's why. If my life becomes too complicated, if the practicals are too complicated, guess what gets pushed out of my life? The meditation. If I'm busy every day chopping and cooking my own soup, which in effect I'd end up with the same thing. But my mind says it's healthier because it's not processed, it's not canned, right? I might not have time for meditation. And let me ask you, which is more important, genuinely, soup or meditation? Right? If you're on this spiritual path and awakening is your goal, you know the meditation is what's more important. Sure, you need the soup or whatever it is that you're eating, because the body has to be nourished properly. You have to be healthy enough to be able to focus on the meditation. This is what Buddha taught us, right? Buddha learned by starving the body and not taking care of the body that it actually distracted from the meditation. And so he learned that he learned what he calls the middle way. You have to take reasonable care of this body, you know, so that it aids you in the meditation. But the soup isn't the priority. The meditation is the priority, you see? So the soup, or whatever it is that I eat, is to be simplistic and natural so that I have the time to go into the heart with depth and meditation to go deep in the heart. The next line, giving with great kindness, Stephen Mitchell, in conflict, be fair and generous. Wayne, in dealing with others, be gentle and kind. I think that what we have in common in all of these, you know, Stephen Mitchell says in conflict, you know, I don't think it has to be a conflict, just in all relationships, as Wayne says, in dealing with others. If we are in tune with the Tao, we are kind, because we are not coming from judgment and preferences and how we think things should be. It's the easiest thing in the world to be kind when you accept things as they are. And I want to talk about this a little bit, because we hear this a lot, accept things as they are, but I don't think it really sinks in for most people what that means. So let's talk about what that means. For example, yesterday we thought that all of the time that Jacqueline and Aggie and Jay had put into the forum, which is months of work, and all of the money that Jay had put into the forum was all possibly just for naught, right? An example of not accepting that as it is, all right? And I didn't do this, by the way, so this is pretend. But an example of not accepting this as it is would have looked something like this. Dang it, Jay, Jacqueline, you are responsible to get this done, right? Why the heck didn't you check into that first? You're telling me that the foundation of the entire platform is wrong and that's why it won't work? We're 1 week away from when I planned on starting using it. You should have. What, do you hear that? You should have. That's not accepting it as it is. That's making up a story in my mind about what should have been. And then really, my friends, for not living according to my fantasy, right? Now, I think both Jacqueline and Jay can tell you they didn't experience that at all from me. There wasn't even any the slightest agitation in my voice because I accepted it as it was. Okay, so that's what is. Well, then I'll continue without it. You know, I can get by without it then. I mean, it was that simple. So accepting it as it is means not putting your imaginary what should be or should have been on it. Because when I'm yelling at Jacqueline and Jay in this little story, I'm not yelling at them because of what is. I'm yelling at them because of what I think it should have been. Right? And I can't be kind. And in fact, you're almost never kind to people when you live in that fantasy of what should be, because everybody else isn't meeting your imaginary expectations, right? The bank teller is talking too much to the person in front of you when she could get this done faster and I could be in and out of the bank, right? So I get up there and I'm not friendly to her because she did not meet my expectations. But again, what you are responding to is your fantasy your imagination of what should be instead of what is. If you just accept everything that is as it is, it's actually extremely easy to be kind. You just accept it as it is. Okay, so that's what happened. Then now what do we do? Right? There's no reason to be, there's no agitation in you. The agitation comes from you imagining what it should have been. And you're acting from that when you're unkind to people. But if you just accept what is, okay, then what do we do next? You know, it's easy, easy, easy to be kind. So again, Derek says giving with kindness. The other two didn't use the word giving. And some people may misinterpret that to mean he's talking about, you know, giving money or something like that. I don't think so. I think kindness is giving, right? Every time I'm kind, I'm giving. Now, unfortunately, every time I'm not kind, I'm giving too. This is what NTI Ephesians teaches. You're always giving. You can't not give. You know, you're giving it to the universe. I love a word that Michael Singer uses. Michael Singer talks about environmental pollution. That's when you're giving unkind. Like if I was yelling at Jay and Jacqueline, I would be giving environmental pollution. I'm polluting the universe with my anger, my judgment. So you're always giving. You're always giving. You're always giving to the universe. But what Derek says is to give with great kindness. He tells us how to give. And again, we give in that way by accepting everything as it is. Right? When you accept everything as it is, then it's very easy to give with great kindness. When you think it should meet your imaginary expectations, you tend to give environmental pollution. The next line, words with great integrity. Do either one of them even have anything similar to that? There isn't a line like that in Stephen Mitchell, but Wayne has one. Stand by your word. So words with great integrity. Stand by your word. To me, that's just being genuinely honest with yourself. If you're genuinely honest with yourself first, that has to come first, then you can have integrity with others. But if you're not honest with yourself, you can't have integrity with others. And let me give you an example of being honest, because this might be tricky for some people. I am being dishonest with myself. Are you ready? Dishonest with myself if I believe that I'm an unworthy scum. And then the next step that comes from that is I have to please others to get them to like me. And then when Cheryl asked me to do something that I really don't feel to do, I lie to both her and me by saying yes. See how complicated that gets? And then I either don't show up, or I don't do it well, or I do it with a grievance in my mind. Dang that Cheryl, why did she ask me to do this? Blah, 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 right? So the whole thing starts by being honest with myself. Honest with myself means only believing truth. I am not honest with myself if I believe I'm an unworthy scum, because that's not true. I'm believing a lie, therefore I'm being dishonest with myself. So the first thing we have to do in order to have integrity is we have to get clear right here. We have to get clear on what's true and what's not true. When I'm clear here with what's true and what's not true, I can make all of my decisions based on unclouded intuition. Right? Unclouded intuition. That doesn't mean that I always say yes to Cheryl. I may have a strong intuition that my time today has to be spent in a certain way. This is what I need to be doing. Cheryl says, hey, Regina, can you help me with blah, blah, blah? And my answer may need to be, no, I can't, because I need to do this. That has integrity in it. That's genuineness. That's honest. And that's trusting my own intuition. And I can't trust my own intuition if I think I'm an unworthy scum and I got to please Cheryl. Right? I can't. So in order to stand by my word, or in order to use words with great integrity, I need to be clear in myself first. Only clarity can do that. The next line, governing with great administration. Stephen Mitchell says, in governing, don't try to control. And Wayne Dyer says, govern with equity. Okay, I'm going to look at the different definitions of administration. So again, he says, govern with great administration. So the first definition is the process or activity of running a business, which is what that was the definition I initially was aware of. But I just felt like there might be something deeper here. Govern with great, be great in the way you run the business. It doesn't do a lot for me. The next one is the management of public affairs or government. I knew administration also meant management. So govern with great management. Still doesn't do a lot for me because it's so easily misinterpreted what that means. I may think great management is controlling everybody, right? The next definition of administration is the action of dispensing, giving, or applying something. That actually turns my heart on. That one I feel something. And I'll tell you why. Because that's an attitude of service. I'm not managing, right? I'm not doing the whole home business of just doing my job running the organization. I'm giving something, dispensing something, applying something, right? There's something coming from my actions. There's a giving happening. Even if I'm, helping the people who work for me get the resources they need to do their job. Right? There's a giving that's going on. So this says, governing with great administration. I'm going to call that governing with great attitude of giving, attitude of service. Lots of people think that their employees serve them. I learned a long time ago that a good boss understands that she serves her employees. Right? It's an attitude of service. It's the giving action of management. And again, Wayne says, govern with equity. Equity would mean that I do not see my employees as less than me. We're all equal on this team working towards the same objective, right? And then Stephen Mitchell says, in governing, don't try to control. Another thing I learned a long time ago, in fact, my daddy taught me this around the supper table. He said that your employees will not only be happier, but they will surprise you if you let them do things their way as much as possible. Surprise you in a positive way, right? They're not only going to be happy, but they will surprise you if you let them do things their way as much as possible. In fact, we have a rule here in the retreat house. The rule is that when somebody else is doing a job, let them do it their way unless it's important. And the example I always give on that is if somebody's hanging a picture and they stand up on a chair with wheels, we don't let them do that. We say, no, get down. You got to find something else to stand on. You're not standing on a chair with wheels, right? That's important. So in that case, they don't get to do it their way because harm could come to them. If harm could come to the house, if harm could come to another, right? But let people do things their way. Because you really, as a leader, you want to empower your people, right? Empower your people rather than controlling them. And if you try to control people, you're not only going to have unhappy employees. The truth is the controller is the most unhappy of all. Because the truth is you can never actually control everyone. Which means, again, you're trying to tell them exactly how to breathe, and they're breathing differently, and now you have to suffer from that, right? So in governing, don't try to control. Empower people. Let people do it their way. Let them have their ideas. You know, there's a certain amount of guidance you have to give if you're the one with the vision. But you have to know the difference between communicating the guidance, you know, to empower them with the guidance, and controlling them. You have to find where that line is. And if you pay attention to how you feel, you'll find that line very easily. Because again, the one who suffers most from control is the controller, right? So again, we want to govern with great administration, which is an attitude of service and giving. We want to govern with equity. We're all one team here. You know, I may have the title of president minister, but that doesn't mean, you know, I'm on top and you're on bottom, right? We're one team here. And in governing, don't try to control. Empower people. Let them do it their way. Let them be inspired and come up with their own ideas. They may just surprise you. The next line, handling with great capability. Okay, so this is where they no longer match so much. I may have to just look at one at a time. So handling with great capability. What that says to me is I want to be focused on what I'm doing, and I want to do it with the best skills possible, which means sometimes I may need to learn some new skills, or I may need to give the job to somebody else who has the skills when I don't have them. Right? I'm still handling with great capability if I ask somebody else to fix the toilet because I don't know a thing about toilets. That's not handling it with very much capability, is it? Give it to somebody who knows how to fix the toilet, right? So I want to do things with focus, and I want to do things with great skill, even if that means delegating or hiring someone else to do the job because they can do it better than me. There's an old saying, if you want something right, you've got to do it yourself. That comes from a controller. No one can do everything well. No one. There's not a single solitary person on this planet that can do everything well. Each and every one of us has different skills and talents. And so a key to being a great leader is knowing the extent of your skills and talents, where they stop and where somebody else's begins, and passing it along. Here, you're better at this than me, you do it, right? Or again, sometimes it's about getting the training that we need in order to do the job right, providing the resources that people need to do the job right. But we want to do things with great capability. So handling with great capability. And then he says moving with great timing, which is the next line also in Wayne's book. He says be timely in choosing the right moment. Intuition, again, for me, intuition. I may have an idea that something should be done, but one thing I've learned, if I sit down, you hear that, by the way? I may have an idea, that's the first word, that something should be done. But if I sit down and I try to do it when the universe isn't ready, I can't. I just suffer. The word, you know, if I'm writing something, the words don't come, you know, the resources aren't showing up. Again, that's attempting to control. Even if there's an idea that something needs to be done, maybe it doesn't, or at least not yet. You know, when it needs to be done, everything you need, including the ideas in your own head, will start appearing. The universe gives you everything you need to do everything that you're supposed to do. And that's just a fact. So if the universe isn't playing along, maybe it's because you don't need to be doing that, or at least you don't need to be doing that right now. So I pay close attention to what I'm to be doing now. What is intuition guiding me in? You know, right now I'm actually writing a book that a week ago I did not know I was going to write. And that book is just flowing. I thought this week I was going to write a different book. I did think I was writing a book this week. I thought this week I was going to write a book. In fact, you can look at my calendar. It's right there. It says, that's what it says I'm going to be doing. I thought I was going to be writing a book called The Retreat House Caretaker Guide. I'm not. I'm writing a book called Natural Meditation Retreat. And it's just flowing, and I'm working tirelessly, you know, and I'm sure that Retreat House Caretaker Guide will probably come up at another time, but it's not coming up this week, and I have to trust that flow, right? I have to trust that flow and do what the universe is asking me to do this week. So that was be timely in choosing the right moment or moving with great timing. This might be Stephen Mitchell's interpretation of that. He says, in work, do what you enjoy. Well, I understand that. That's a great basic theory, but I will tell you, I don't love every little detail of my job, like the tax work that I have to do that's part of the job. It's not fun, but I understand when it's time to do it. I do it with willingness and enthusiasm and as much capability as I have. You know, I always, Jacqueline has heard me say this a million times. Ken and Lynn also heard me say it. And Cheryl has probably heard me say it. I'm sure Cheryl has heard me say it. I always say that's why they pay us. Because there are some parts of this job that nobody would volunteer to do. And so although we have a lot of volunteers in Awakening Together, some of us get paid for what has to be done, whether you want to do it or not. And, you know, in work, do what you enjoy. Well, I happen to enjoy paying my bills. So that still applies there, you know. So I do what's in the job description, the things that need to be done. And as a whole, if we're not talking about the details, I love my job. I wouldn't want to be anyplace else. There's no other job I want to be doing, right? But that line is not an excuse to skip the parts of your job that you might not completely love. Right? There are things that have to be done. And again, that's why they pay us, those of us who get paid. And I've had employees who work for me who didn't understand that. I've had employees who work for me who were paid, who only wanted to do what they wanted to do, and they didn't want to do the parts they didn't want to do. And that didn't work out, not if I'm paying them, right? It works out for volunteers. We let volunteers do that. But we don't. When we're paid, we just do what we have to do. We're the backbone of the organization, and we get it done. So at the end of this, again, we're talking about the highest goodness. Because it does not contend, which we saw meant compete, it is therefore beyond reproach. So the highest goodness is not looking around to see if I'm more good than you, if I'm better than you, right? It's not doing that. It's just being. It's just doing what it does. Stephen Mitchell says, when you are content to be simply yourself and don't compare or compete, everybody will respect you. Right? So again, we have that idea of non-competition, non-looking to see if I'm getting the favor from the boss or if the employees are noticing what a good boss I am, or, you know, is everybody noticing how wise I am or how generous I am or anything else. No comparing, no competing, right? Just being. Follow intuition, staying in the moment, trusting everything. And then Wayne says, one who lives in accordance with nature does not go against the way of things. He moves in harmony with the present moment, always knowing the truth of just what to do. And I love that line because I feel that is 100% true. That if you stay inwardly focused, rather than getting into your ideas and your shoulds and your expectations, you know what to do in every moment. Right? Whenever people say they don't know what to do, especially with their life, I know they're completely lost in their mind. You always know what to do if you're in tune with your heart, even if it's do nothing right now, right? You always know what to do. The heart guides perfectly in the moment. Sometimes people don't know what to do because they want to know what they're supposed to be doing next month or next year. Intuition guides in the moment. So if you stay in the moment, you know what to do now. Sure, you might not know next week when this thing comes up, what I'm going to do. Like last night, Michael Langford was giving the example, in 5 days, I'm not going to have an apartment. With the unhappy mind, with, oh my God, in 5 days, what am I going to do? Oh my God, in 5 days, what am I going to do? You don't really need to worry about that. You know, you just stay in the moment. What am I to do now? And step by step by step, you'll be fine. Right? What am I to do now? So one who lives in accordance with nature, which is the current moment. Nature is the current moment. One who lives in accordance with nature does not go against the way of things. He moves in harmony with the present moment, always knowing the truth of just what to do. So let me just read these again as kind of a summary. That's the end of the chapter. The highest goodness resembles water. Water greatly benefits myriad things without contention. It stays in places that people disdain. Therefore, it is similar to the Tao. Dwelling at the right place, heart with great depth, giving with great kindness, words with great integrity, governing with great administration, handling with great capability, moving with great timing. Because it does not contend, it is therefore beyond reproach. Let's go to Wayne next. Ooh, look who's in the driveway, Cheryl. Can you see? Mm-hmm. There's a deer in the driveway. 2 deer in the driveway.
They've been actually hanging out on the lawn for the last 4 or 5 days.
Yeah, they're sniffing, eating stuff off the driveway now. I don't know what's there that they could enjoy, but they're in the moment doing what they do. So the supreme good is like water, which nourishes all things without trying to. It flows to low places, loathed by all men. Therefore, it is like the Tao. Live in accordance with the nature of things. In dwelling, be close to the land. In meditation, go deep in the heart. In dealing with others, be gentle and kind. Stand by your word, govern with equity, be timely in choosing the right moment. One who lives in accordance with nature does not go against the way of things. He moves in harmony with the present moment, always knowing the truth of just what to do. And now for Stephen Mitchell. The supreme good is like water, which nourishes all things without trying to. It is content with the low places that people disdain. Thus, it is like the Tao. In dwelling, live close to the ground. Remember, that was to keep your life simple and natural, right? In dwelling, live close to the ground. In thinking, keep to the simple. In conflict, be fair and generous. In governing, don't try to control. In work, do what you enjoy. In family life, be completely present. When you are content to be simply yourself and don't compare or compete, everybody will respect you. And that's the end. Jacqueline, I might listen to part of you on the phone because I'm thinking I'll probably eat and go take a walk. So you may see me hang up here and then come in as a caller, but I will be listening. And the title of this will be Lesson 8. I'll type this in also, but Lesson 8, How to Manage. That's going to be the title, How to Manage. All right, bye everyone.